It's the True Faith Podcast 18-19 season review. You've got myself, Alex Hurst, Rob Clothier, Ben Wade and Norman Riley to talk through the season that was. Seems like it's flashed before our eyes, and we're going to get right into the nitty-gritty. Was it a good season? How did it go? Yeah. Where did it turn? Who played well? Who played not so well? What were the big games? All of that to get our teeth into today. For you listeners, really quickly, we are supported by FansBet, the unique gambling company who give half of their net profits back to good fan causes. So if you do like a gamble on the football or any other sport, please check them out. We're also ably sponsored by our fantastic patrons. Got a few hundred of them who pay about £6.80 a month for about 20 to 30 extra podcasts. We're still continuing to produce content on Patreon throughout the summer. We're sending Norman across to South America to make a documentary on Newcastle's South American players and produce podcasts. We're also quite potentially sending Rob across to China to cover it. So come on, get involved. You know, give her a try on Patreon. We've got loads of content coming up. But without further ado, lads, Newcastle United season 18-19. We've got a bit of a loose running order to get through today. I think I'll start it off. But I'll tell you what, we'll go to Norman then. Norman, we had a really difficult start to the season. And Cardiff City away was a fixture that you wanted to highlight in particular. So what did Cardiff away signify to you for Newcastle's start of the 18-19 season?
Well, Alex, to be honest with you, I actually wanted to highlight Cardiff at home, but I also talk about Cardiff away because that was vitally important. Cardiff away, I think, you know, we'd had a fairly decent performance against Spurs on the opening game of the season, given that all of the usual factors that ensure Newcastle United start off a season under Mike Ashley with a load of uncertainty and with kind of everything working against them. Given all of that, we performed very well, I thought, against Spurs. And I think, you know, we could have easily come away with a point, but we didn't. But there were good signs. I thought, you know, Kennedy looked really good. The players looked like there was a bit of confidence in there, despite the fact that, you know, Lejeune was missing. Rondon clearly joined late and wasn't fit. Gale had gone, so, you know, Shelvey wasn't in a position where, you know, he built up that relationship with Gale the season before. He could just pick out Gale. He could anticipate, understand Gale's movement. That option wasn't there. So I was very worried going into the Spurs match, and especially given the World Cup that England had as well, and the Spurs players were in that England squad, I thought we're going to get a hiding, and we didn't. So I went down to Cardiff full of good spirits, and obviously the Cardiff game, you know, it was a very protracted game between two sides who were desperate not to get beat as opposed to win, but we had that brilliant opportunity at the end with that injury time penalty. And for some reason, Kennedy stepped up to take it. And I think I did the Match Day podcast and I was like, he'll score, he'll definitely score. But deep down, his body language suggested that he was a bit fearful. And obviously the penalty itself was pitiful. And he, in my opinion, never really recovered from that penalty miss. Psychologically, he looked absolutely beaten pretty much any time he played subsequent to that match. And obviously, not winning that match away against Cardiff, and then given that, you know, ultimately five of our first 10 games were against five sides who finished in the top six, we were really desperate for a win. And that desperation, the more desperate you come, the less likely you are, it seems, to win. And I think the not getting the 3 points at Cardiff had a huge impact on the whole squad psychologically. I feel that if we got the 3 points in that game, I think we'd have been looking at different matches against Crystal Palace, Leicester perhaps at home, and I think we may have come out of that period with 4 or 5 more points on the board. There are other factors as well, you know, that I believe contributed to the slow start. I don't know if you want me to go into those right now, but I'm perfectly happy to do so.
Yeah, well, first of all, sorry for putting Cardiff away on you. That's a lack of planning on my part when you said you wanted to take Cardiff. But you're spot on in everything you say, and I do want you to go into those details, maybe not straight away though, because I totally agree with you that Rafa's teams at Newcastle, from what we've seen, are entirely confidence based. And I reckon, you know, the C word that Rafa uses the most through the season isn't what he probably uses to describe the people who work above him, But confidence. He's always talking about confidence, and like, it seems quite strange to me sitting in this room with you lads to think that these players who are like really good at football, you know, comparatively they might not be as good as other teams in the league, but they've managed to, you know, build this career to this point that confidence, that something as simple as missing a penalty and not winning a game can have such a detrimental effect on the team, and it was looking really bad for a while. And Norman, I'll come back to you on the start of the season. I want to come back to Ben first, though. Start of the season, and Rob's very kindly printed the fixtures off here for us to look back on from NUFC.com, of course, a great resource for Newcastle United fans. You know, we didn't win for, what was it, 11 games? 11 games. Looking through those games, though, and I want to ask you about the context of the rest of the season, is it just one of those where, as Norman rightly says, when you're facing five of the top six in your first 8 games or whatever it is there actually only so much you can do? Or looking back at those games, do you think, you know what, if we'd had a little bit of luck, not some terrible refereeing decisions, and I'm thinking of Brighton at home when Mariner gives them a non-existent corner, they have one shot and score. I'm thinking of Man United, Anthony Taylor at 2-0, handball. You know, I'm thinking of Tottenham at home, we hit the post and the crossbar and all that kind of stuff. What did you sum up our start of the season as? Bad luck, or we were just a bad team? Because remember, I think a lot of people, despite what happened in the summer, saw our red hot finish to the previous season, and we're thinking more of the same here, and we'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, wasn't it? I mean, it was by far and away the toughest start, wasn't it? But I still feel like we gave a really good account of ourselves. It's strange to think that 1 point out of the first 6 games. Well,
so
it was before,
so bad
that,
when
it?
You
like,
say that. Yeah,
but
like,
it was, and that was a draw at Cardiff, who you could argue was probably our worst game in that period in terms of performances. Cardiff could have nicked something. Well, could have taken all 3 points. Obviously, we missed that pen that Norman's gone into there. But the performances against Spurs and Chelsea in particular, I mean, especially Chelsea, obviously we went back, went behind, we came back to get level in. We were in the ascendancy at that point. I mean, Hoss. Exactly. That's it.
It's a great header.
He had not a bad start of the season. He chipped in with a few goals. And I think that was where we were all expecting Rondon to come straight in and just be. I know it's not Rafa's way normally, but given that we know what Hosslou was capable of, I think that was probably one of the biggest disappointments, was that we didn't see more of Rondon at that point. Obviously, that probably paid fruition later on in the season with how well he's finished. But that was a real disappointment. But within that, we had some really good performances, and we showed a lot of fight, and there was a lot of adversity against the team. Obviously, we hadn't had all the sort of investment that I'm sure Rafa was expecting, that we were probably expecting. And I just think that knowing what we had, that the bad luck with the fixtures, we actually did really well. We just didn't get the points that we deserved from it. But I feel like that would have done the team a lot of good in terms of strengthening them psychologically. Having gone through those games and been so close, they probably would have given them a lot of confidence. It's interesting you're talking about Kennedy, who obviously went the other way, but I think there's a lot of players in there that will have taken a lot out of how that we weren't that far off those teams. And I think that probably gave us a bit of confidence when we went to play the teams in the division, that we've already matched the sort of played the hardest games of the season, and we've matched them without getting the sort of results that we probably deserved out of them.
Yeah, no, Norman, I haven't heard that from Ben. Just interesting to get your thoughts on how we played at the start of the season. How much was it luck v kind of performances, and what you know, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about the reasons for that, and let's call it what it was. It was an utterly disastrous start. I mean, I'm looking at the fixtures here, and we go to Crystal Palace on the 22nd of September, and it's nils each in one of the worst games I've ever seen in my entire life, and as Newcastle fans, we've seen a few bad ones. Yeah, true faith, big day out as it was. And then, you know, when you're at Southampton, mate, on the 27th of October, we only pick up our third point of the season. What are your thoughts on that start, Norman? What, like, how did we get to this point after being so enthused at the end of the previous season?
I agree with a couple of things that Ben said. You know what I mean? Luck does, to a certain extent, play a part. But you have to look at the bigger picture. And it starts, basically, in June. Rafa not getting every penny generated as promised. So first off, you know these plans are made at the end of the previous season. Players in mind to buy. This is what I'm going to have to spend. This is what I'm going to do. And then that's pulled away from him. He has to start his plans all over again. not only does that, you know, to a certain extent mean starting from scratch, it also immediately generates a feeling of there's a lack of trust there straight away. The plans have been, you know, trashed, and he's had to go and move on to a new set of plans so close to the start of the season. You know, I don't know what kind of spirit it must engender when your boss is pretty much just lying to you permanently, which is what Mike Ashley did to Rafa Benitez. So there's that. There's the absolute carry-on of the Salomon Rondon deal. Rafa clearly indicated that he wanted Rondon early on. It dragged on, it dragged on, it dragged on. Charney came out and said that basically didn't want to sign him, more or less. Rondon eventually arrives. He arrives unfit. He hasn't had a pre-season. You know, how do you kind of plan tactically for how you're going to start the season when you're looking at, you're playing friendlies with players who are either moving on in your plans, or haven't even arrived. What do you do with that? You know, Rafa's basically trying to get in a pre-season planning schedule within a week before the Spurs game. And as I say, Rondon arrives in. Now, I'll put these five names to you, right? So let's look at this. Rondon, Lejeune, Perez, Shea and Almiron. Probably five of our most important players when we went on that really good run in the new year. Now, you look at the start of the season. Rondon in the first 10 games played 212 minutes of football and he was unfit for those. Perez played in every single game. He started 9 of them. He was a sub in one, but he was taken off 6 times and he's dropped at home for the Watford game. Shea started one of those matches. Almiron wasn't there. Now let's look at Almiron. We were linked with Almiron last summer. That's a deal that could have been done last summer. So we start the season with a full pre-season with Almiron fit, Lejeune fit, Rondon fit, Perez, you know, and perhaps, I mean, Shea's a different one. It just took him a while to settle in. But you're probably looking at 7 or 8 more points from those first games that we started. So I really think that the fact that the summer was another summer that went completely and utterly wrong and not according to the plan that Rafa probably had in his mind, you know, the day after the Chelsea game 17-18, that had a huge impact on how we started the season. And, you know, you can look at, let's say, the 10 games at the start of the season where I think we picked up 2 or 3 points. And then the 10 games after Almiron's debut, when everyone was firing all cylinders, we picked up 16 points. The difference is huge. It's just planning, getting people in when you want them, and you know, and moving forward with optimism. And that just was not the case at the start of the 18-19 season. And I'll lay the blame squarely at the doors of the people above Rafa for that.
Well said. And I think that's pretty comprehensive. You know, this is a real hard season for me to kind of digest. And when you look back, and now where we are recording on Thursday at 7:30, and, you know, you'd kind of hope that Rafa was still locked in a room with Mike Ashley, like, forcing him to drink pints and he's sick in fireplaces while he demands that he's allowed transfer autonomy for next season with every penny generated, not 30 million out of the club, but every penny generated. But in reality, it's probably, I don't know, who knows what's going on. So I don't want to get too much into the future of the manager in this podcast. We're going to cover it so much when the decision is announced on True Faith. But it's like, if you look at last season, the 17-18 season, there was a lot of context to that and it made a lot of sense. So we started all right, got much worse, signed Dubravka, signed Kennedy, Perez comes good, Shelby comes good, Diome comes good. Lejeune comes good with Lascelles, and everything makes sense from that point on. We're really good. We beat all the teams at home, and we kind of get to this summer, and everything falls apart again for the second summer in a row. And then this season's a weird season because I remember going into that Watford game that we won. Thinking if we don't win today, and let's not forget, Watford were like had won like 6 in a row or something. Watford were like 4th or something ridiculous going into that game. I remember thinking that specifically because they've brought about 1,500, which is shite. Proof I've got no beef with Watford, but proof that, like, you know, we're competing and being, you know, easily bested by clubs of this size who get 20,000 for home games and in the best ever top flight run in about 30 years since Graham Taylor was there. They only managed to bring 1,500 in a 3 o'clock Newcastle, but that's another story. If we deserve to lose that game, Watford were really unlucky. If we hadn't won that game, we were in real trouble. And, you know, once you get to that 8, 9, 10 game mark of a season, you start looking at the stats and stats start being produced. Like, no team has ever gone so long without winning and stayed up. No team's ever finished, you know. I think the main one from this season, I've got nothing to say in this, but I think in the last 10 years, every single team who's been top at Christmas has won the league. Until this year. People keep saying, "Oh, what more could Liverpool have done in the title race?" Well, not blow a 7-point lead would be my top of my suggestions. But who are we to talk about such things, considering what happened in our distant past? But yeah, so this season's a real strange one. And Norman, you mentioned the signing of Almiron as being pivotal in 16 points picked up in the 10 games after he signed, which is, you know, kind of form that would get you, if not in the top six, you know, certainly on the way heading there. Rob, you know, let's look at it another way. You know, we talk about season 17-18, the signings of Dubravka and Kennedy. You know, Rafa finally settles on Shelvey and Diarmé as a two that season, and from that point on, we're all right. Totally different this season. A lot of people would look at Isaac Hayden, and Norman's talked about that Cardiff game and, you know, that penalty that we missed. Despite, let's face it, against a shocking Cardiff side, we were shite. And there's also a lot of people forget about the Forest away game, which was 3 or 4 days later. We were shite in that, and a lot of people were wondering, like, how have we got so, despite the terrible transfer window that we had, clearly regressed since the end of last season. So Isaac Hayden is sent off in that game, and how impressed were you with his turnaround, and how much do you put our turnaround this season down to his inclusion in this side?
Yeah, so in terms of the Cardiff match, first of all, I was lucky enough to be there as well, because I travelled down from the north.
Lucky.
I feel like I was lucky. I love going to away games, you know, like it was fantastic. I met up with Norman and all the lads down there. I think Chris Shipman was there, and Sean and a few of the other lads as well. It was my first trip to Cardiff. And when Hayden came on, I think he came on for Mankiw at half time. Mankiw had started at right back, and Hayden came on, and a lot of us in the away end were kind of like, "Oh my god, you know, Hayden's coming on. Where's he going to play? Is he going to play right back? What are we going to change formation? What's going to happen?" And also bear in mind that in July of that summer, like last basically a year ago, he'd said he needed to leave Newcastle United, and we're all thinking it's hard in it. He hadn't played against Tottenham, I don't think. Basically, no. So for me, when Mankiw went off injured, I really did worry about Hayden coming on, and it was a really strange one, because, you know, the tackle that he made to get sent off for was horrendous. I mean, like it looked like almost like going back to that was what was the game when Williamson got sent off. Almost,
and Leicester.
Yeah, and he was accused by Carver of getting deliberately sent off.
If ever you think things are bad now, just think
well,
back to what
this
Rob's
is the point
about.
I'm making, right? I really did worry then. I thought, like, this is the second game of the season. We're playing away at Cardiff City, who are going to get relegated, and we were struggling. It was a shit game. Isaac Hayden came on for Mankiw, and I thought, like, is his heart in it because he'd announced he wanted to leave? Family reasons, is his heart in or not? Then he goes and gets sent off. But the first thing I thought was, he's done it on purpose. You know, and then...
You're thinking, has Ashley actually kidnapped Rafa over the summer and put John Carver in with like a mask on or something? Like, what is going on here?
There was all sorts of things going through my mind at that point, honestly. Especially after a few pints.
I was not the main one. Why can't Kennedy take a pen?
Well, that was also worrying, considering he hadn't made a single pass in the first half. As a lot of people will remember, I'm sure he didn't make a single completed pass in the first half of that Cardiff match. But yeah, so Hayden, just to go back to Hayden, he was sent off. And from that point, I really did think that we wouldn't see any more of him that season. This season, I just thought it would be the end of him. Rafa's very much a manager that he has to trust his players, and given that situation where it appeared that, I mean, Hayden to me, when he signed for Newcastle United, he comes across as very professional, very, you know, very level-headed, and that tackle that he made in that Cardiff game was not like him. I thought he came on probably unprepared, because he probably wasn't expecting to, especially to play it right back, but and then he goes and gets sent off, and I just thought, well, that's probably the end of the save. But to go and then just to jump miles forward, I know we're going to go through the whole season, but I just want to go all the way ahead to the Liverpool game. After the Liverpool game at home, the lap of appreciation. During that lap of appreciation, as Isaac Hayden walked past the Strawberry Corner, there was chance of Isaac Hayden want you to stay. And all I could think of then was when he was sent off against Cardiff, and I thought, how has he gone from being vilified, like, you know, after that red card at Cardiff, which potentially led to that 0-0, to being, like, lauded by the fans at the end of the season? And I think that really made it stand out to me, like, how good a season he had had since that red card. And he really, really has knuckled down, and the effort that he's put in, and again, it's confidence. Like, you know, like, he's not the greatest midfielder in the world. He's not a Patrick Vieira. He's not a Roy Keane. He plays in that sort of position, but he's nowhere near the ability they had. However, Rafa seems to get this performance out of players which is just above their station. You know, like, he has this ability to coach players and almost give them the confidence to go out and play way above the ability that they have in them. And I think Isaac Hayden sums that up perfectly. He is, you know, he's not a world beater by any stretch of the imagination. But when I've watched him play this season, apart from Cardiff away, he has been exceptional. And I distinctly remember I was doing the match day podcast at Wolves when he scored, you know, to put us 1-0 up. And for those who subscribe to Patreon and listen to the matchday podcast will have heard me say that I was delighted for him. He played well, not only in the start of that Wolves game leading up to the goal, but since the red card at Cardiff, just excelled. And I was genuinely, like, thrilled for him. I was really pleased. Managed to score against Wolves in one of the Wolves games, I'm sure. But the amount of decent performances he put in was immense. And I'll come on to the partnership he struck up long stuff in him. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, very well said, Robin. And Ben, you know, I'll ask you the question. You know, what was it accidental, do you think? Do you think that, like, seasons are defined on such things? And we'll look at, you know, I'm going to talk about formation at the minute, but I think that, you know, we sign Isaac Hayden and we'll play 4-4-1-1 every single week in the Championship without fail, as we did nearly the whole of last season, 17-18. And this season we've got that very obvious tactical change, which I'll come on to. But, you know, Longstaff, Hayden are 4 and 5 in terms of midfielders. They're not even in the conversation when Key, Diarmé and Shelvey are fit. And Shelvey goes off against Watford when he's playing really badly. That leaves Key and Diarmé from then on. Then Diarmé gets injured. And then Key goes off to the Asian Games. You know, how much of, you know, I'll say it, has Rafa been lucky by those circumstances forcing his fourth and fifth choice best midfielders into his team?
Well, you can't say he was lucky, because it was absolute shocking. Look, wanting to be left with them three, with them two, especially for the run of games. So I wouldn't say he's been lucky. Dealt a shit hand, I think you could call it, to be fair. But I wouldn't say it's luck, because I think with Rafa, he's so he's clinical in the way he sort of goes around his work. So when he signed Isaac Hayden, he didn't sign him just to be a bench warmer or anything like that. He obviously saw potential. The things Rob's just been talking around there about the character of the bloke. I mean, he's all the stuff he does outside of the off the pitch sort of shows you the type of bloke he is. And I think that sort of just that determination. I mean, at the end of the day, he's come through Arsenal. You've got to have something about you to stick around as long as he did as well to get there. So there's clearly something there that Rafa saw in that player. And his versatility, I think, obviously was one of the big things when he first came. And you talk around there, Rob, about him playing right back at Cardiff, then coming into play centre mid later on in the season. And I don't think it was luck, because I think Rafa knew he was capable of coming in and doing the job that he was asked to do. Now, he wasn't coming in and playing as a playmaker or anything like that. He was coming in basically to be an extra defender in an advanced role to come in, win the ball, push forward, and he's a brilliant tackler. I mean, that's one of the things you look at Hayden, his progression through this season. The more confidence he gets, the higher up the pitch he's pushing. I mean, there's some games where he's almost playing like a right winger, like in a defensive role, but he's pushing that high up the pitch and winning the balls back. And Longstaff grew from that as well, I think. And to be honest, it seems strange to say it, but I think Longstaff will have taken a lot from playing with someone like Hayden that probably wasn't going to be, when they came in together, Longstaff, had it been a Shelvey, a Key or a Diome, he would have just been, right, you like, I'll just play it really simple. I'm not going to sort of risk anything. You're the senior player here. You do all everything. Whereas when he came in with Hayden, I don't think there was that aura of sort of, you're much better than me. It was a kind of, we're on equal footing here. And I think that'll have given him a bit of a confidence boost to play his game and start to sort of get forward and take risks, I suppose, in games and push on. I mean, you look back to that penalty wins at Man City, challenging Fernandinho in their box, nicking the ball. Like, we wouldn't have done that with Diome or any of the, like, Key or Shelvey. So you could just see how much those two, or I suppose it's the challenge of the competition of, like, we've got an opportunity here, like, let's take it and we've got nothing to lose. And I think that pushed both of them on to sort of better performances.
Yeah, so I was having a little look through the fixture list, the results list now on NUFC.com, and I had a little look at when the Hayden-Longstaff partnership started. So the first game they played together was the 1-1 draw against Blackburn in the FA Cup, which was
a classic.
Yeah, but took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, I was there with my kids, and it was I regretted going.
Trust me, when me, Mickey, and Paul missed the first two goals I scored at Ewood, we regretted going as well. I'm not even going to it. People who listen on Patreon will know why, but we went away giving them to miss the first like 40 minutes.
But as we all know, the FA Cup's clearly not important. So the first Premier League game that they started together was Chelsea away, and I was there. But again, luckily, it was a fantastic game. Those who remember it, we lost 2-1. It was, you know, went down 1-0 early on, and then Kieran Clarke scored from a corner. And what I remember from that game was it was the first time I've ever been at the very front of the away end, so like literally like pitch side, if you like. And I kept a close eye on Sean Longstaff that day because I thought, you know, looking at when the team lineup came out, I thought, you know, we're playing Chelsea, world class team. And we're starting with Hayden and Longstaff in the middle. And similar to what Ben said, you know, in the Man City game, I was terrified, you know, going into the match. I thought, we're starting with Hayden and Longstaff in the middle against a world-class midfield. And I thought we were just going to get torn apart. But watching Sean Longstaff in that match, I think it was at that point, you know, I watched him and I thought, wow, this lad's going to be a quality player. You know, 20, 21 years old, playing at Stamford Bridge against this world-class midfield. You know, he was getting closed down quickly, but wasn't losing possession. And all I could think watching that game was that, you know, Rafa watching him play would have been delighted because Rafa loves midfielders who retain the ball, retain possession, and keep the team going forward. And Longstaff was doing all those things, even away at Chelsea, you know, in his first Premier League start. So, and Hayden, you know, they complemented each other fantastically. And what better occasion to sort of showcase yourself than Chelsea away in the Premier League against that team? And it was fantastic to watch, honestly. Like, Longstaff just looked like he was a cultured midfielder. Like, I don't know, like, you know, it could have been Shelvey in there. It wouldn't have made any difference. He was playing long balls, short balls, but he rarely gave the ball away. And I just thought to myself, that, you know, this lad's going to be good for him. And it was such a shame that he got injured when he did, because I think we would have probably finished even higher if he'd stayed fit and stayed in the team. But the injury he picked up against West Ham was a shame. But so I mean, the combination of Longstaff and Hayden in terms of the Premier League went on. You know, we beat Cardiff 3-0 at home. Then of course the Man City game, we won 2-1.
We'll come on to that.
You could see it was going to be a successful company.
The best thing about key thing about Longstaff is he, unlike all of our other central midfielders, bar Shelvey at Fulham, is he's a goal threat. And it's he got his goal against Burnley, which is a brilliant goal, but he'd also been knocking on that door for a seriously long time, and that. Without wanting to get too negative for a minute, because I'm still really impressed by what this team have achieved this season. Like, we aren't very good. we don't score many goals. We're quite good defensively, but we don't score many goals. You know, not much more than a goal a game. You know, once upon a time in the Premier League, that would have got you relegated. I think I'm still in shock that last season Huddersfield stayed up scoring 28 goals. Like, talk about the writing being on the wall. I wish I'd put my mortgage on Huddersfield come down this year. Like, but you know, and a player like Sean Longstaff comes in, young, local. By the way, great proof that you don't have to be like 18 and a superstar or 19. You know, 21 getting on 22. He's not actually that much younger than Hayden. But he'd been out at Blackpool. He's done his time. And you know, to go back to the question, I'll say it. I think we're a little bit lucky there. And that's what you know, we're unlucky against all these games. And, you know, Wolves away and all that kind of thing when we really deserved more. It was a stroke of luck that, you know, Key got called up to the games and that, you know, I wouldn't say players getting injured to stroke of luck, but I don't think in a relegation battle that Rafa Benitez turns to Isaac Hayden and Longstaff to potentially turn things. I could be wrong. They could have been in waiting. It could have been a master plan. But I think that injuries to other players, Ben's few.
It's a disgrace. Rafa's laid hogtied in the van of Mike Ashley at the minute. Absolutely fuming at the thought that this was luck.
Are we live streaming or something? Anyway, I want to talk about the formation because I think that one of the most important things to the success of Hayden and Longstaff is their defensive ability. And you're spot on, Rob, like you say, moving the ball and keeping the ball moving, particularly with our fullbacks and our third centre-back, was crucial. But if you listen to Rafa Benitez, spoke to Guillaume Balague recently for a Five Live podcast about the biggest games of his career, and he talked about how one of the things he took pride at Valencia and at other teams since was that teams like just can't open his sides up, they can't create chances. So Valencia, I mean, we're 32 minutes in. I joked to Norman off air that the last year's season review we did was 2 hours long, and we definitely weren't going to do 2 hours this time. But we'll see how we get on because we've got so much stuff to talk about. Steven Gerrard and Rafa Benitez, when Benitez first signs for Liverpool, like, I think Liverpool for some reason had played Valencia loads in the previous year as Valencia went on to win the Europa League. I think they played in the Champions League, the Europa League, and in a friendly at Anfield. And I think one of the first things that Carragher says to Benitez, the new manager, is, when you're a Valencia manager, we literally couldn't create a chance against you. And when you look at us when we're at our best, and I'm not talking about set pieces because they don't count because we're fucking shite at defending set pieces. Miguel Antia, earn your money. You're out there with your clipboard. We are terrible at defending set pieces. But ignore, you know, I'm talking open play here. When we play the likes of Manchester City at home, and even when we played the likes of, you know, Liverpool to an extent, you could call it bad defending. But we're not the kind of team, like, we're going to talk about the Man City game. We don't beat Man City at home with Dubravka pulling off a string of saves. We don't beat, you know, Cardiff at home, Huddersfield at home, Burnley at home. Those teams like almost struggle to like even get in our penalty area at times, and I think the ability of Hayden and Longstaff to control that part of the pitch and to close down space and using the extra centre back that we've got to kind of interchange with them at times, particularly Hayden, is a massive asset in this formation. And I think one of the reasons that Hayden was so successful and Longstaff is so successful in this formation isn't just their ability on the ball, particularly Longstaff, it's the fact that they're so fit and they can cover so much ground. Longstaff and Hayden in those games, they're just all over the pitch, and you don't get that from our three other central midfielders. And I remember doing the match day podcast at Old Trafford, 2-0 up at half time. Us three there. Cheers, Anthony Taylor, you prick. who, Anthony Taylor, by the way, that I don't know if anyone watched Leeds Derby, but he just basically, he went out there and he thought, well, I'm going to lose control. it'll be an entertaining game, like 12 cards and 2 reds or something. Just terrible, terrible referee. But, you know, I remember looking at Shelvey and Diarmid at half-time thing, and that was class, but they're knackered here. They're absolutely knackered. And Jose Mourinho throws on
Fellaini,
Fellaini and Mata and Sanchez. He just throws on midfielders, knowing that those
three subs that probably cost more than our entire squad.
Exactly, but I think it's the fact that Mourinho, being a good manager, recognised that we were blown in midfield. Diarmi getting on, Shelvey not the most mobile. Compare that to Hayden and Longstaff. And listen, Diarmi and Shelvey played great that day, and they provided other qualities. But Hayden and Longstaff's mobility is probably what Rafa loves. And people talk about, you know, would we? Is there any chance of keeping Hayden? How much would you sell him for? I honestly think that Rafa's first choice starting to next season out of the current crop of midfielders would be those two players, Hayden and Longstaff. And if we'll look at quickly, because we're running out of time, the change to 5-4-1 is interesting. Can we all just have a little think back and a smile to ourselves about the time when we had Lejeune and Shaw in that back three? Wow.
Oh, no.
That was one of the best moments, like periods of my life. we'll come on to Shaw in a bit. Regarding this, is excluding games against like Man City away, when we did it last season in 17-18, we'd go to five at the back, but it was very much a containment strategy. This season, at the start of the season, we'll stick with our 4-4-1-1. Perez in behind us. Norman's talked about Perez's start, subbed off six times in the first nine games or whatever it was, and dropped for the other game against Watford, where he eventually scores the winner. It isn't until Burnley away, which me and Rob were at, where we play this formation. Now, when I think back to how we analysed that game, Burnley play with two big lads up front, Wood and
Barnes, isn't it?
Barnes. Barnes or Vokes, I can't remember who played that day.
Yeah, Vokes scores, doesn't it?
By the way, I can remember standing with you in the away end, in the concourse, and the team sheet came out, and we looked at it and went, what's going on here? And then,
Where's Richie playing here?
Then when we went out and saw the team line up, I think it was me, you and Adam were there, and we said, what the fuck is Richie doing left back?
Yeah. I haven't played there so disastrously last season against Chelsea as well, but he plays that formation, and I thought, well, it's having three centre backs to combat the height, because that's all Burnley are, just a long ball team who play long balls to those lads. Chris Wood is like a genius in the air, outside the penalty area, at finding players, and it works, and we win, and we should win 4-5-1, but we don't.
Richie misses an open goal.
But it was a good night, and I'll talk about the away games a little bit more later on. We'll play that game. That was the 26th of November, right? And we were unbeaten in four games. We'd won the last three. Burnley, Bournemouth, Watford were drawn at Southampton. And we're going to West Ham at home. And I think West Ham at home it's almost the Watford of the previous season. Like, you know, Rafa's teams are, and everyone was, you know, showing the graphics, you know, but almost like what points, what goals got for and against at various points at the end of the season are the same. It's like, we'll always get one. We'll always get one shite home game against a shite team who, like, just turn it over for no reason. And that West Ham game, I reckon, was seminal in the season, because first of all, I believe it's the last time all season we'll line up with four at the back at the start of a game. And he plays, I think it's Fernandez and Scher that game, and Arnautovic and Hernandez and Anderson's a front three. Have our pants down. The midfield can't cope with it. And I remember looking back at the team, I think it was like Diame, Key, Rondon, Perez, Richie, all the lads,
good,
do you know what I mean? All the real lads.
Team.
So it's the first team at the time. Like, basically the first team out, and we really, really should have lost by far more than just the three on the day. West Ham were wasteful in the second half. They could have scored more than the three. And I think that was the day Rafa really decided that, right, we are going to have to create a defensively solid identity, because we were conceding too many goals in games. It wasn't the same team that you'd seen previously. And I think Hayden and Longstaff are crucial, because when you look at the results after that, Rob, you were at Everton, and so were you, Ben, for an excellent 1-1 draw. We play with five at the back against Wolves, where we lose. We play with five at the back against Huddersfield away and get a win. And then we play seminal day. And this is where, for me, you know, I lost faith a little bit in this, because we play Fulham at home in one of the worst games ever. You know, Fulham, we've just beat them 4-0. They were probably worse when we played them in December under Ranieri than they were when we played them on the last day of the season. And that's where you've got to hand it to this manager of ours. That's where, like, gobshites like me, not that I was saying sack him or he doesn't know what he's doing, but I was saying, surely you've got to play for at the back. And he knew that with the right application and the players learning and working in training, that this formation would be the formation that down Manchester City, the formation that Liverpool didn't deserve to beat against. These three, you know, these sides have just pissed on everyone else. And I know we were unlucky a little bit on Boxing Day at Liverpool with Salah diving for a pen. It's like that's how our manager is world class. He's kind of identified this formation. You know, we're kind of forced into it, and across the season, we'll then see some of the best attacking football that we've seen in quite a while in terms of the goals we've scored, the results we've picked up. And it's just pleasure to know that there's a tactical mind, plus the coaching staff, and then a set of players like a Matt Ritchie, for example, who struggling. He was struggling all season as a right winger. He's hiding at left back, a left wing back, and becomes one of our most important players. And Fabian Schär is another one. Fabian Schär, to me, just my own opinion, looked hopeless. Before that change to five at the back, he had his pants pulled down by Felipe Anderson. Kieran Clark was regularly getting in the team ahead of him. And although we could all tell he had ability on the ball, the change to five at the back or three centre-backs, however you want to define it, player of the season.
I mean, he played in that Forest game, didn't he, when we got Hamed as well, and looked awful. Like, I was really surprised. Like, when you see him at the beginning in that back four, you think, no wonder he was £3. We've probably hoed three million away here. But you spot on. I think the biggest thing, and I suppose it's what Rafa craves, and everything you've just said there, is the adaptability. It's the adaptability of he can put whatever side you give him, he will make a team difficult to beat. But also the players, and you can see in terms of the business that he's done, and everything that he's put together, it's all about being adaptable to situations. And you talk about a few of the players you've mentioned there. They've all played different roles in this team. And Shaw, as a centre back in a back four, looked a little bit lost, a little bit out of place. Put him in a back three, he's pushing forward, he's getting involved, he's starting attacks, and becomes basically like a playmaker in your back five. And it was just, I think that is by design from Rafa. He knew what he was buying when he went out and got Shaw for an absolute bargain. Now, I mean, 3 million, it's got to be one of the best signings of the season. He knew what he was doing, because he'd obviously seen what that player could do and how he would work with the likes of Lejeune on the other side and would complement the other players in that team. And you've got to give Rafa the utmost respect for basically building that team into the team that we've seen at the end.
Yeah, and on Patreon, we're going to do it this summer as well. We'll do transfer shows. We'll speak to journalists and fans of clubs, of the players that were signed, the clubs that were signing these players from. Norman, talk to me a little bit, Fabio, about Fabian Schär. I mean, Ben's just given us a eulogy there, which is well said. You know, you spoke to a journalist last season, ahead of the season, before any of us had seen him play. And, how did that go? And what kind of indication did he give in advance of the kind of player that we were getting?
What the journalist from Deportivo, he is a journalist who covers Deportivo for La Voz de Galicia, which is the equivalent of the Chronicle, but just with less adverts when you got the website. He said in that particular interview that Shea was an excellent footballer. He was great at bringing the ball out from the back. He could make these kind of 30 to 40 yard marauding runs. His range of passing was fantastic, but his defensive lapses in concentration and positioning were a liability. But what he did say to that was, give Rafa Benitez the opportunity to work with him, and there's a real player in there. And he said, you've got a bargain. And it proved to be absolutely right. The thing is, we've seen this with Rafa. We've just been talking about Isaac Hayden there. Isaac Hayden pretty much played most of his games at Hull City as a right back, and all of a sudden he's one of the four box-to-box midfielders in the Premier League by the time he leaves Newcastle United. Rafa's done that with Shea. He's absolutely turned him round. Shea started one league game in the first 10, two games in the first 11 if you include the Forest match, and there's a reason for that. It's because, as you said, Alex, he was completely lost playing in a back four. But the moment we switched to that back three, the moment that he's had sort of 4 or 5 months on the training ground with Rafa, with Rafa's staff, he looks a completely transformed player. And if he continues the form that he's shown in the last 3-4 months of the season into the next one, then we'll struggle to keep hold of him next summer.
Yeah, you're spot on. And I suppose that brings us nicely into the game you did want to talk about, Norman, Cardiff City at home.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. The reason I want to speak about this Cardiff game is because I think it was a seminal moment in the season. So if we look back at the Cardiff away match, there's a great juxtaposition. The Cardiff away match had a psychological impact in the fact we missed that last minute penalty. It has a knock-on effect. This Cardiff City home match, for me as a fan, and I think possibly the players themselves, and certainly obviously other Newcastle fans that I know, it had a huge impact on us psychologically, because at the time we played them, so let's talk about the teams that we finished above. Brighton were in 13th place on 26 points. You had Bournemouth in 12th on 27. Burnley were in 15th on 21. Southampton 16th on 19. Cardiff were in 17th on 19. We won 18th on 18 points. That was after 22 games. And you look at the games prior to this Cardiff match, we'd picked up 2 points from our previous five points from the previous nine. So we were struggling. I mean, we were struggling. And, you know, the transfer window opened. We hadn't signed anyone. The Almiron deal was, you know, as protracted as any kind of transfers at Newcastle. It was dragging on. Probably we thought we're not going to sign anyone. Classic, or we'll get three loan signings in on deadline day, as is the standard, or as it was until that point. And I thought that we absolutely comprehensively outplayed them. The first 20 minutes, they were a little bit dull. They were a little bit cagey. But the moment that Shea slalomed through that whole Cardiff City side, and of course, you can point the finger at blame and say Cardiff was shocking in how they let him do it. But to have the confidence, the self-belief, and the kind of close control to go and do that, I just thought that not only must that have given a great boost to Shea, I think that the way that we utterly outplayed them gave a great boost to us. And I remember leaving St. James's after the 3-0 win with Si and saying, we basically need to survive this season. We need 34 to 35 points. That win had put us on 21 points. We picked up our 35th point against Bournemouth away in March, and Cardiff City got relegated with, I think, 34 points. So that for me was huge. Not only was it huge for Shea and the kind of belief that the fans obviously had in him after that game, I just think it was huge for the players and the fans as a collective.
Definitely. I mean, it resurrected everything in the club, didn't it? The team, the performance, the fan base. I mean, I remember thinking at that Cardiff time, around the time of that Cardiff game, thinking if we don't beat these here, we're probably one of the favourites to go down. And,
well, sorry, Ben. I'll just add one more quick important stat to that as well. Guess who got the goal in the third minute of injury time?
Against Cardiff at home.
Mm-hmm.
Great question. That was it, Perez.
It was Ayoze Perez, and look what happened after that.
We haven't even talked about him yet. I mean, we're like 45 minutes in here, so... Yeah, I mean, really quickly, I want to get onto the key moments of the season, and that is definitely one of them. But quickly, Ben, you know, a lot was made of our away form. We only lost to West Ham, am I correct here? We only lost to West Ham outside of the top six. I mean, we lost to all the top six teams away, but, you know, only seven away defeats in 19. I mean, we only won four, but still only seven away defeats. And I'm talking not just points, but the performances at the likes of Bournemouth, Wolves, you know, positive team, Everton, which you were at. You know, how important do you think they were across the season to what were eventually achieved?
Absolutely massive. I mean, the Bournemouth and Everton game in particular, I was at both of those. It was that fighting spirit. And I think having faced all the adversity we had at the beginning of the season, and there were a lot of things going against us, that just, even though there were draws, they were massive, because it showed that we still had the fight. The players were still up for the fight to stay up. And these were against good teams. I mean, Bournemouth at the time were in great form. Everton at the time, obviously, you can talk about the sort of the investment Everton have had and sort of the expectations of that team. And we went in there as sort of a struggling team, really, and gave a really, really good sort of performance and showed a fighting quality that I don't think those teams were expecting. I mean, Richie's last minute winner. But felt like a winner. I think I say it every time I say it, the winner. The equaliser. We didn't deserve to lose that game. We didn't deserve to lose against Everton. And I think just the confidence it got from coming out of those games where we were facing, in Bournemouth especially, of potentially having played well and obviously Rondon scores that first goal, but then letting it slip and falling to 2-1 and things were going against us. To manage to claw something back and get something out of that game was absolutely massive. And I think Rafa must have been saying, look, we don't lose again, we keep going, we make sure we take something out of every game that we can from this point on. And okay, we weren't winning many games and we only won four away games, but those away points, those draws were so key, because it just kept the momentum going. And I mean, you look at sort of the Liverpool, how they've managed to sustain their title sort of bid was on that sort of whole, we've only lost to Man City. Newcastle built confidence from the fact that we gave a good account of ourselves in every game, and we were tough to beat, and nobody wanted to play Newcastle. I mean, it wasn't long ago when Newcastle were a soft touch. Newcastle were thought of as one of the easier teams you could play
particularly
against.
Particularly away from home. Particularly away from home.
Basically a walking 3 points. Just would show up and get smashed off everyone. Not anymore. Nobody wants to play Newcastle United at home these days because they know what they're in for. They're in for a battle. They're in for a well-drilled team that no matter who's on that pitch, they're going to get stuck in and going to be tough to break down. And that was, as I say, it was just key to... So I say the confidence for our team, but also I think sort of putting the fear in other teams as well, that making us a team to be feared. And I can guarantee there would have been nobody in that last stretch would have been looking forward to playing us at home.
Well, can I just jump in there quickly about on the away form and not losing to any side outside of the top six other than West Ham? I think, you know, we can look at it and say, well, we only won four games away. But what we did by getting a point against those teams in and around us, what we also did was stop them picking up 3 points. Yeah. Now, those sides would have been looking at Newcastle United as a relegation rival and thinking, this is a game that we should be picking up 3 points. This is a game we're going to get 3 points in. A bit like we look at Huddersfield at home, we look at Cardiff at home, we look at, Burnley to an extent at home. I mean, we're thinking, you know, we'll be all right because we've got these at home, we'll get 3 points off them. Well, what Newcastle United did was, we stopped those sides winning the games or winning that one game that they thought they might get something out of.
Spot on. And let's move on to a game which will live long in the memory. Rob, you want to talk about Manchester City at home. 2-1 defeat in Newcastle United. Since then, in case you didn't know, Manchester City have won all 18 Premier League games.
Yeah, exactly.
And won like the 12 before that or something.
I think everyone's probably seen that graphic on social media of, you know, like Liverpool and Man City's, you know, win, draw, loss chart. And there's just that little blotch on Man City's list of one red tile, which is Rafa Benitez's Newcastle United turning them over at St. James Park. In terms of results, I mean, probably the biggest result of our season. For those of you who listen to us on Patreon, Norman does a show called The Greatest Game, talking about, as it sounds, games that people want to talk about for Newcastle United, where we've exceeded expectations. I plan to record a Greatest Game podcast with Norman all about the Man City 2-1 win, so keep an eye out for that if you subscribe. But yeah, that game, again, I said to Alex and Ben before this podcast, I wanted to talk about Sean Longstaff and Isaac Hayden. I distinctly remember, similar to the Chelsea game, you know, looking at our team lineup against Man City at home. I think it was on a Tuesday night or something, was it? Like a midweek game, evening match, and it was on TV, obviously, Man City chasing the title. And you look at the team sheet to see Newcastle United's academy productee, Sean Longstaff, alongside, you know, realistically, probably a squad rotation player in Isaac Hayden starting in the midfield against Fernandinho, Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva, and just filled us with dread, to be honest.
I'll admit freely, I'd lost the faith. I didn't even turn up the game because I thought I can't be asked to go and sit in the rain and the cold and see we lose like 9-0 here.
Yeah, I was terrified, and 9-0, you know, after 24 seconds when Aguero scored.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have been an unreal sort of prediction. But you know, when you look back at that match in terms of our season. Again, Alex said it earlier in terms of confidence, you know, to beat a team like Manchester City, one of the world's best teams, you know, you don't get better than that in terms of instilling confidence in players. And when you do it with your fourth and fifth choice central midfielders in the team lineup, it just magnifies that even more. And when you also consider that, I mean, Ben's already mentioned that Longstaff won the penalty for Richie to score the winner. Isaac Hayden got the assist for Rondon to get the equaliser. So it's just again testament to the performances that those two put in as a combination this season, that they were able to go into that match with the confidence to not only put up a decent performance against those world class central midfielders that I meant, but to actually outplay them on the day. And I think we finished that game with like 24% possession in that game, like less than a quarter of the possession.
We made it count though.
Well, exactly, Ben. That's what it's all about, isn't it? And you know, on the day we dug in, and yes, it was a fantastic team performance. But I always think, you know, in the middle of the pitch, central midfielders are pivotal to how your team play. They were surrounded by world class players going forward. So comfortable, I thought, on the day. And what, you know, watching the game, I was gutted to go behind after like 20 seconds or whatever it was. But then from that point, they did have a lot of chances, but we just quelled a lot of the problems that were causing us, and to make our two big chances count.
It's a game that I still can't make sense of. You know, first of all, I'll give you two of Newcastle's major weaknesses in the Premier League. One, going behind. And two, playing Man City. Even when Man City was shit,
both those things.
We were rubbish. Like, I've just checked the stats, and it was our first win against them in the league in 22 games. Like, Stuart Pearce was sticking out Manchester City and still turning us over. Like,
hold on, Alex. 22 years?
22 games.
Oh, 22 games. Yeah. I thought you said 22 years. I was going to say, I'm sure I remember one.
Just the 19 defeats in that time as well. So it's not even like we're just kind of, you know, we're just draw all the time. 19 defeats.
I mean, this is like Man City with Richard Dunn and that, isn't it? Like, I remember horrific, horrific teams that we've struggled against.
Like David James up front.
Darius Vassell in that.
I remember the whole the build-up was like, it was literally like reeling off all the stats. It was like the last time Newcastle like didn't lose to City or got a win, and it was rolling back. It was just an embarrassing run, wasn't it?
But, and I said it at the time, first of all, I'm just reading on the BBC here, it was our first penalty to be scored at St James's Park since in the Premier League since Jorginho Wijnaldum against Spurs.
I can't.
You know, that's rigged. It's rigged. The whole thing's rigged.
Don't start that.
Was that back in about 2000s or something?
That's a whole debate, isn't it?
Aye, but... you know, it's one of them games, and I look at the starting lineup, and like, you know, you'll all know everyone, but Houghton players like DeAndre Yedlin, £5 million, Fabian Scher, Matt Ritchie, the right winger playing left wing back, Christian Atsu, Jose Perez, who cost about again £40 from Tenerife, and West Brom Solomon Rondon, like downed Manchester City, and again I'll say it's one of those games where. You know, Man City, looking at Rob's stats here, only had four shots on target. One of them was a fucking goal.
Yeah.
Like, so it's weird because it wasn't like this. You know, if in 10 years' time, when Manchester City haven't lost a game in 6 years, like because they've financially doped their way to that pinnacle, people might, you know, youngsters might, oh, how did we beat them? And it's like, oh, I bet they hit the bar. I bet they had four cleared off the line. You know, did Dubravka have the game of his life? I bet we got away with a couple of penalties. You know, were they down to nine men or something like that? And it's like, no, we just turned out in the second half. We stayed in it until half time. They had a bit of a go after half time, and then they didn't score. And then it was a bit like the Watford game where when Watford hit the bar at the 60th minute, they're just like, we're not going to score today, lads. Like, Man City were like, probably not our. We're probably not going to score again. And then Rondon.
They were
scored.
Playing to keep. I was going to say, like, yeah. keep it tight, innit?
Can you remember the look on Guardiola's face, sat on that bench, almost crying, wasn't he, on the touchline?
I've been Rafford again.
I've been Rafford. Yeah.
But and we just beat them, and then it was just like at full time. It was when the final whistle went. It was just one of them like, how the fuck did that happen? Like, and we played really well. Don't get us wrong, but and we defended brilliantly, and you know, and it was that back three of Lascelles. Sher and Lejeune, Norman.
Can I add to that? It was also in this. This is going to sound absolutely preposterous, but I don't care. I'm quite happy saying it and being preposterous. Guardiola has got one way of playing, and those players are absolutely magnificent at doing it. And it's fantastic football to watch. We know all the platitudes that they've had; they're all deserved. But you mentioned before, Alex, that Rafa Benitez build sides that don't concede many chances. And in that match, he knew that City had one way of playing, and if we let them play it, if we let them play that style, they would have just destroyed us. But what he did was, he just squeezed them out to the wings. He constantly, we set up to just squeeze them out of the wings. And they created, I mean, those four chances, I remember obviously the Aguero goal, but clear-cut chances, I don't recall any clear-cut chances because we absolutely limited them. And for me, that, the players were fantastic, yes, but that is the absolute, was the absolute epitome of a Rafa Benitez masterclass in how to kind of defeat an adversary against all the odds. It was an absolutely beautiful tactical performance, regardless of the possession we had, regardless of how many chances we made, it created. That, for me, is one of my favourite all-time performances.
We only had two shots, but you're spot on there, Ben.
Yeah. Just on that point, it's really interesting because you look back at Guardiola's career and how good they've been, and you think of the teams that have managed to sort of have success against them. So your Chelsea's back in the Mourinho era, when he was at Bayern, I think they got knocked out to Juve, possibly. But basically all teams that have found basically put that game plan into place where they were pushing them out. And there's only really one way you can stop Guardiola teams from playing, and that's keeping them wide. And yeah, we did it with Longstaff, Hayden, and some ridiculous players.
On that point, look at the benches. And it's one thing to put an 11 out there and then be able to defeat one of the greatest teams the Premier League's ever seen, if not the greatest. And Rob's just laughing, looking at the names. It's like, who have you got on the bench to try and influence this game? You've got goal machine when he plays Kieran Clark, but who isn't a great defender at this level? You've got Murphy, a lad who struggled to get on West Brom's bench. You've got Kennedy, who kind of kick a ball most of the season. You've got Fernandes, who admittedly is class. You've got Mankiw, who most Newcastle fans before the run of games at the end of the season would count him in their worst ever players.
Did moonlight is Andres Iniesta at moments, though, later on in the season.
And you've got Callum Roberts, who's just been released. And Freddie Woodman, who's probably worth fourth choice goalkeeper. And you know, Guardiola's got Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, Mahrez, Otamendi, Gabriel Jesus, and Phil Foden. Like all of those players walk into
absolutely easy.
Probably just by themselves as well. We could sack off the rest of the bars.
And the other like 18 Premier League teams as well, to be honest.
So ridiculous night at St James's Park. And let's not forget, I only want to touch on this really quickly because we've got so much to get through. We've done an hour. This is a really shit season off the pitch. Protest groups, fan movements, not really working out. Boycotts, late walk-ins. Like, the mood before that Man City game, when it was announced that Almirón was going to be done, kind of helped a little bit. But like you say, Ben, you decided not to come to the game. That night at St James's Park, I think the official attendance, if we've got it written down anywhere, the attendance was only 50,000, and Man City, for a change, brought a full allocation. So there's like 2,000 unsold seats, and probably 6,000 or 7,000 season ticket holders didn't go to the game. Not out of anything else than just pure like dissatisfaction at the way things were going. Rafa Benitez kicking off constantly, quite rightly. He was leaving constantly. You got Mike Ashley on TV saying the club is closer to being sold than ever before. It was just a really shite season for stuff like that. Social media, really unpleasant place at times. People victimising people, turning on people because of an opinion on football, or it's just like, fucking hell, like, this club can be so good, but there are so much of this, like, negativity which surrounds it. We know the reason why. It's because of one bloke, ultimately. But, like, it's nice to be able to look back at the football and not at the other shite that just surrounds Newcastle United while we have this kind of poisonous ownership, ultimately, that seeps its way down from the top. So I just wanted to mention that quickly because it has a lot of it in terms of someone who, you know, I try to write a lot about football and we'll run these social media platforms and these podcasts. Like, you know, sometimes it's been a really, really, really tough season in that respect. But, you know, onwards and upwards, and it worked out okay in the end. But, there was, you know, for a long time, a lot of people thought we'd get relegated. I mean, looking at the league positions, you know, we lost to Brighton at home at the end of October and we're bottom of the league. We're bottom of the Premier League, below Huddersfield, below Cardiff. And I think I remember asking myself, or I might have even said it on the podcast after the match, if you cannot beat Brighton at home, who can you beat? Well, it turns out quite a few teams, but we're going to move on, and we're going to talk to Norman about the front three. And why don't you kick off, Norman, with the signing of Almirón and how that changed the season?
So, first of all, I think it changed the season in the sense that we eventually broke our 14-year-old transfer record. You know, we paid whatever it was for Michael Owen back in 2000 and actually was it 2004 2005 and at the time, I mean, you know, that's when we were breaking transfer records, you know, only a few years earlier, what, 9 years earlier, we'd broken the world record for Shearer. You know, it was quite a regular occurrence for us to spend what at the time was considered big money, and then we are taken over by Mike Ashley. The financial problems at the club are highlighted, and Mike Ashley decides that he won't spend anything more than I think possibly Rafa's biggest signing prior to Army Ron may well have been Matt Ritchie. I might be wrong on the exact figures here, but Matt Ritchie and Jacob Murphy were quite expensive comparatively, but obviously, you know, 12 million in the Premier League is buttons, really. And we signed Almiron in 20 million. We were all chuffed that we broke the record. But even then, you look at 20 million. I mean, Bournemouth go out and pay 20 million for Dominic Solanke, who barely even plays. But what it did was it lifted us. It just gave us a sense of movement forward, if you like. We haven't broken our transfer rate since 2005. We've done it now. It felt like a little step forward. And I think there was a huge psychological boost because of it. And then obviously, we see his debut against Wolves. He comes on as a sub, and we concede that equaliser in injury time of injury time. But Almiron really impresses straight away. He's direct running. His ability on the ball, his desire and his hunger to have the ball. And we all go to his home debut against Huddersfield. And to be frank, he's just fantastic. And it's obviously the first time that we see Perez, Almiron and Rondon together. So he has a little stat for you. Perez, Almiron and Rondon, 9 starts together before Almiron gets injured against Southampton. 5 wins. In that period, Ayuzia Perez gets 7 goals in 9 games. 7 and 9. Rondon gets 3 and 9, which is more or less, you know, what he's averaged, 1 of every 3 games. That's a kind of striker Rondon is. He's a 1 in 3 game man. The points that we get, as I mentioned before, with the Almiron, Perez, Rondon front 3, 16 from 10. The points that we get from the first 10 games of the season are 3. I mean, his importance to the side, the impact that he's had, regardless of the kind of mouthy people on social media, well, he hasn't even had an assist. He hasn't even scored a goal. It's not a reflection of the reality. The reality is that he improved that side. He improved the confidence and self-belief in people like Ayoze Perez. Even Rondon, to a certain extent, who I don't think suffers from lack of confidence ever. I think he boosted them hugely, and immediately there was this natural understanding between these players. They just knew each other because what they are is they're intelligent, and obviously it helps that they all speak the same language as well. But they're intelligent, good footballers, and Almiron was the catalyst for the form that Ayoze Perez has shown, the form that Salomon Rondon shown the last third of the season. His importance to the side, I don't think it can be understated at all, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing him ready for the new season, and I really hope that Ayoze Perez stays, and I hope we get Rondon, because I think those 3 plus a couple of additions as competition for them could really see us score more than the 42 goals we got last season.
Griezmann's available, isn't he? So
Zaha wants to move as well, so you never know.
Yeah, spot on, and we could probably do, and we will do stuff over the summer, because we're going right into this on Patreon podcasts about the squad and you know how suitable it is for next season and what we need. But that front 3 will give anyone a game, apart from Arsenal, where we played really badly. But like, apart from that game, you know, that front 3 it really caused problems for teams, and you know, Rondon and Perez have really come on. And whatever you think about our tactics, or you think Rafa's negative, or you think he's fine. One thing which we really lacked this season before Almiron was pace, and that's your Cristiano. Cristiano was like being continually brought on in the first half of the season. People kept saying, why is he bringing on Atsu? And I think Rafa realised that unless he gets some pace in this side, hence beating Manchester City, Cristiano was one of the best players against Man United at home as well. You can't be pedestrian in the Premier League. Look at Cardiff. I mean, they've had their Murphy brother, but unless you have searing pace in the Premier League when you're down at the bottom, you're not going to lay a glove. And think back to earlier in the season, the real tough days. I mean, I'm talking like Palace away, Southampton away, Leicester at home, even Brighton at home to an extent, although had a lot of chances, were just so easy to defend against.
Actually, Alex, I'd like you just add to that if possible. So we all know about Perez's form in the latter stage of the season. those first 10 games that Perez plays where he subbed six times, he's dropped once, you know. He made those starts that he made, he played up front, right? In that tiny amount of games with either Hosolu, Rondon, Mutua or Jacob Murphy. 10 games, 0 goals. You also factor in the fact that Rafa wanted Almiron the summer, and this goes back to what I was saying before. You get a fully fit Rondon, Miguel Almiron and Perez in at the start of the season. You look at those games we had, Palace away, Southampton away, Cardiff away. I would even argue Arsenal and Leicester at home, definitely Brighton at home. You could be looking at 7 or 8 more points there. You really could, and that puts a whole new perspective on the season, because if we start the season with 10 to 12 points from those first 10 games, then who knows?
And that's the exciting thing, isn't it? Ben, do you want to say something?
I was going to say Champions League, here we come.
Well, that brings me on to the last part of the podcast. So I wanted to speak to Rob. You know, do you think that we're... I mean, assume the manager's staying. Do you think that we are in better shape going into next season now than we were at this point last season going into this season? And why?
I would say yes, because despite the fact that we've finished 3 places below where we finished last season, I think really comes down to 2 things. I think the front 3 that we've got, as in Perez, Almiron and Rondon, I think is superior to what we had at the end of last season. You look back to when we beat Chelsea 3-0, I know obviously Gale scored that day, but we're a big advocate of Dwight Gale. However, I think in terms of Premier League, Rondon is more suited to style. And I think also you've got to look at, weirdly, this, like we've covered already, the formation change. I think, whatever you want to call it, 5-4-1, 3-5-2, whatever you want to call it, I think that's really worked for us. And, you know, Rafa's come to the conclusion to play that formation, and it's talked about it numerous times on the podcast throughout the season. Just because we're playing 3 centre backs doesn't mean we're a defensive team. We have looked so good attacking wise in that formation. You can fully understand why Rafa stuck with it, and it's become his preferred formation with the current proper players that we've got. Obviously, he's come to probably that conclusion by the fact that probably our strongest position is centre-back. We've got a lot of good centre-backs. I would count Keith Clark in that as well, which I wouldn't have probably last season, if I'm honest. But I think he has shown glimpses of a sound Premier League player this season. I think a couple of reasonable additions to the squad. You know, all the listeners are on, you know, no Newcastle fans are daft. We all understand this. Rafa's not asking to suspend, he said it himself. It won't take a massive amount to big difference to this team. There's a little bit of investment in playing squad. We'll see us challenging top 7, I would suggest. Top 8, at least. So, personally, I think we are a better side than we were that we finished with the last season. And, you know, keeping Rondon's key. Obviously, Rafa is key. And it's a huge summer ahead. It almost feels like a crossroads. So, 2 ways. We can either progress with Rafa, or we can get in somebody who definitely going to be a worse manager than Rafa, and carry on without investment. Fortunately, we're only looking downwards.
Yeah, can't disagree with any of that. Well said. Really quickly, lads, to finish this one up. Player of the season, Norman first.
I would say Fabian Schär, just because not only do I think it's unexpected how fantastically well he became by the end of it. I think, you know, I think we all perhaps thought, oh, maybe this kid's not cut out for it. But he's just been brilliant. 4 goals as well. I mean, we've got a centre half who can actually score goals, and that's really important. Definitely Schär for me.
Nice of you to name mention Kieran Clark there as well at the end. Classy, Norman. Ben?
So many potentials. I'm going to go with Matt Ritchie.
Matt Ritchie, yeah.
I think I've always stuck up for him, even when there was doubters earlier in the season, Dodsy.
Because he was played really badly, like the rest of the team.
He was class. Nah, I just think he's embodied everything, the fighting spirit of this team, and his adaptability. He's squeezed into a position that's not where he's not used to, and has still been key in a lot of the good that's come of this team. There's some more obvious sort of names, but I think Richie's played in every game this season. He's been the one mainstay other than Dubravka. He's played in every game, and I think he's been at the forefront of that turn in form.
Rob?
Yeah, for me, it is our number nine, Salomon Rondon. We haven't done this deliberately. We have all chosen different players. Well, we haven't come to Alex yet, but for me, it is Rondon, purely because I think without him this season, we would have struggled with goals. Nearer to bottom three than what we've seen us finish. So, yeah, Salomon Rondon for me has to be signed.
I think they're all reasonable suggestions, and I don't think you can look past Christy Natsu. only joking, as much as I love the little lad. Slash want him replaced by much better, obviously. We'll not do this on purpose. I'll go for, and I was always going to go for, Ayoze Perez. Really close one with Rondon, and I think Rondon's contribution, like you say, Rob, is massive. But just in terms of the joy Perez has given, like Southampton at home was a really, really good day. Like, it was a belting day. You look at his contribution in the second half of the season again. Everton at home, massive. Do you know what I mean? It's just like he just seems to be a giver of joy. And I'll give it to Perez because he just gets so much shit and got so much shit. And the one thing that's probably tipped over Rondon is he scored that goal against Watford. And if we hadn't beaten Watford that day, I'd be really concerned. I'd have been really concerned about our ability to turn around. We would have been fine because, like Norman correctly said earlier, 34 points keeps you up because Cardiff goal difference is so bad. Perez for me, because I think that if we can keep the manager and we keep these lads together, I think Perez is capable of playing for Spain and getting up towards that 15-20 goal mark.
If in a better team, so, and I include Newcastle with a bit of investment, he could be a 20-20 goal striker because you talk about Norman mentioned there his first 10 games with who he's playing with and the type of team and the form that we're in. He basically minus 10 opportunities from his final total. And you think as we develop and become a better side and that are going to take games. Remember, this is a team. So he's got at double figures again with a team that doesn't play with the ball, that does their best stuff without the ball. How the hell is he getting that many goals like in that team? It's ludicrous. Well,
absolutely. I'll add to that as well. I think anyone who doubts how good of a footballer Perez is, those doubts may disappear when they see the next side that he signs for, because there's every chance that this summer, I'm thinking teams like Arsenal, Emery wants, he wants good value players into supplement his squad. Pochettino at Spurs, if he stays, doesn't have loads of money, he's got to be very careful with it. Simeone and Atletico Madrid as well, they're losing Griezmann. Perez is an absolute ideal replacement in the sense that Simeone will bring him back to Spain, he'll get him for a good amount of money and he'll do a good job. So, you look at how good Perez is, will be indicated, I think, to anyone who doubts him by the next side that he signs for, unfortunately.
I completely agree, Norman. I mean, Atletico is the one I could see him fitting right in because he's a Simeone type of player. He's a grafter, puts a hell of a lot of work in, will work for the team and is a complete team player, and he seems like the perfect Simeone player. So, as you say,
well, bollocks to that because he's still there. he's not allowed to leave.
Here first.
You're spot on there with what you're saying, and yeah, I mean the old ears, hands in the ears celebration, fingers even, and he needs to like build in the next season and just have like earmuffs or headphones, old school headphones, just something. Block those boos out, Ayoze. Okay, we asked the listeners at very short notice to produce a player of the season, and they've gone with Rob's choice of Big Salomon Rondon. 52% of the vote. Shaw got 36, Hayden 9, because they're only three I gave.
I'm guessing all the rest was for Matt Ritchie then.
someone did call
Christian Atu.
Was that Ben Wade?
Christian Atu. Yeah. quickly, lads, who do you think the listeners awarded their player of the season to last year?
Ooh, last season.
Oh, that's a tough question.
I would go for Dubravka.
Norman. John Joe Shelby?
It was by an absolute 67% landslide, Jamal Lascelles.
Wow.
So that tells you how much his stock has dropped. I mean, this time last year, people were up in arms that he wasn't in the World Cup squad.
That's true.
Southgate
sure lost his number.
He's had a tough season slash being eclipsed by the two lads playing either side of him.
Well, I don't think he's had a bad season. He's just, you're right, it's just
I think his work goes more unnoticed because it's that sort of silent, sort of like Grafton defensive work, isn't it?
He was this season's Rondon. We didn't win without him. Okay, this has been the True Faith Podcast end of season review. We've got a few more free podcasts coming for you over the next couple of weeks. We did a live event in London with George Colgan and Luke Edwards. There's a podcast coming and recording of that. There's a few other things we've got to put out, but for the rest of the summer, it'll be patron only until the start of next season. So please do consider coming across if you want any Newcastle United fix over the summer. While you're around the pool, on the plane, or just staying in the England, doing your normal job and you listen to podcasts.
Or in prison.
Or in prison. I don't know whether the prison system allows podcast downloads. I don't know what the Wi-Fi is like in prison.
Maybe we should try and get back on Radio Newcastle for the Pitland Hospitals.
Radio Newcastle? You mean Radio Tyneside?
Whatever it was, I can't remember.
Anyway, blast from the past. This has been the True Faith Podcast. My thanks to Ben, Rob and Norman. Speak to you all very soon when we have news of the manager. Stay in, hopefully. Cheers.